Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. I am your host, as always, Ben Thomas. You know, we talk about the world of technology and training and simulation, and then we talk about things like AR and VR and how that expands into different applications across different vertical use cases. One of the areas that our technology really has become almost ubiquitous is in the world of training and simulation and teaching and training. And I wanted to have a conversation a little bit more about that today because, you know, no longer can we as an industry not be willing to have these conversations and not be willing to talk about how we're serving different industries, not only as manufacturers, but as service providers. And when we talk about that world of training and simulation, I think there are a lot of questions that we have to ask, right? Best practices, where are things evolving? And one of the places, obviously, is in the world of AR, VR, digital simulation. To talk about that, I brought on Nate Henderson, CEO and Chairman of Built. Nate, thanks so much for coming on.
Good to be here, Ben. Thank you.
You know, Nate, a lot of our listeners typically skew more towards what I would say the technology manufacturer, installer, service provider, so they don't always get to have conversations at the end of the line, not only with users, but technicians and folks like that. As much as we want to, it's easy as a technologist to focus on the engineering side and to focus on the product development side and kind of forget that there are people that go through that channel. You know, one of the ways that our industry continues to evolve is through things like AR, VR, digital simulation. And I want to kind of start with that. As someone who gets to live, not only work with manufacturers, but end user service providers all across really the globe, what are some of these trends that are kind of coming in from a training and simulation perspective when you start to talk about digital training, AR, VR, using my phone, using an Apple Vision headset? What does that kind of look like in modern times?
Well, the first thing you kind of have to preface it with is understanding the problem set. And, you know, when these things started 15, 20 years ago, we were really looking at how do I further enable a very already educated and enabled audience? And that's not the case today. When we talk about how we do enablement, oftentimes you may not ever know the person that's working on your product. They may never get a certification from you. You know, it used to be that big companies all had their own service groups that would go out and do this stuff. And today that's actually quite rare. And so not only are you not going to know the person, you can't always validate how much training they've received, but these are now 17, 18, 19, 20 year olds. These are not people that grew up intending to do this type of work. So there is huge need, but the gap as far as skills that they're bringing into it is pretty significant. And so I think what we see that's a positive aspect of this is all the gains that have been made in the consumer technology world and just tremendous user experiences that really Apple pioneered. You can now take the best practices of those things and tech that we have from there. And it's now bridging that gap to this user group that are very digital natives, but are now being thrown into the industrial world. And how do we make them more successful is really the challenge. But as I said, the great part about it is there's already a really good foundation of consumer technology that's bringing these two worlds together.
Well, I love that you kind of started there, right? And it's when you talk about the skills gap at large, it's obviously a far larger conversation than training, but that's a heck of a place to start because really for the first time, you know, you have people that are finding their way into the industry almost on accident, right? You're not finding people getting into the industry for the most part. When I say industry, I mean blue collar style industries, plumbing, yeah, engineering, installation, HVAC, all that kind of good stuff as well. You know, the path into that industry 15, 20 years ago, even beyond that, was apprenticeship and trade school. And now, because of the way the technology is evolving, a lot of different career paths are opening up to different people for the first time. I think you mentioned, you know, there are even folks who are learning about careers and then 2 weeks later they're on a job site, right? So the challenge of recruiting and kind of teaching and training these people who don't have that foundational knowledge is kind of difficult. If you would kind of just talk a little bit about sort of that job market as a whole and why it's so important to reach those folks from a digital perspective.
So first, in recognizing that when you look at blue collar jobs, we're short millions of people in the United States today. And the only reason that problem isn't just screaming at all of us is we've had a dip in the economy. And so a lot of just construction, you know, manufacturing has kind of slowed down a little bit. But that will start picking up and we'll start to see that the biggest problem industries have is not the ability to manufacture it. It's the ability to actually install, set up, maintain these things. And that's where these installer networks and really the blue collar jobs become so important. So on one hand, yes, we have this Gen Z, Gen Y that didn't intend to come in here, but the reason they're coming in is because they're great jobs. It's great money to be made. And as you said, Ben, in the past, there was this massive obstacle you had to overcome that was, you know, years and years of apprenticeship. And they would come in and say, hey, you can be successful in this industry in 15 years. Well, our country needs them to be successful in like 3 years, right? There's just that much work. But the money is great. There's great opportunity. The fastest path to entrepreneurship for a young person today is to go into these trade places.
Absolutely.
Whether it's construction, electrician, something like that. There's huge opportunities there. And so it's now drawing them into this market. And it just becomes a question of, so how do we enable them and make them successful? Because in the past, the problem was, and even 2 years ago, it was you would recruit these people to come in, and then you drop 19 binders in front of them and say, hey, memorize all this. The eyes gloss over, and your turnover, your burn rate out of these training classes in some cases is 50% in the first 6 weeks. Because we're taking enablement and training tools that were designed in the 90s and we're applying it to, you know, Gen Z digital natives, and that's just not the way that they're ready or able to learn.
Well, you know what's interesting too, and I think, you know, when you talk about that lack of skilled labor in those trades, that should worry the manufacturers and the service providers, because what happens is if I'm Honeywell, right, and I have just built this incredible smart home HVAC ecosystem, I've got one at home, but say it's installed poorly. Well, guess what? Your customer experience is terrible. You're having more problems than ever. You're having to send a tech out to go fix it again. You've got more support spend because you're not, you know, you're having to coach somebody through who probably isn't, you know, equipped at their own house to fix these things. It's a problem that the manufacturers need to also address as well, right? It seems like there historically has been a level of insulation of, hey, we're going to make this, right? I said this kind of in our industry as well. Hey, I'm going to make this, and then I'm going to kind of push it down the line, and then our channel partners, our vendors are going to deal with it, manage it, and install it. You can't live like that anymore, right? Because part of the customer experience and satisfaction as a whole is so much tied to that education. The manufacturer has to take responsibility for it.
Yeah, exactly. And so those companies that realized that 3, 4, 5 years ago that said, hey, we need to help our distributors and others with this, it's a joint problem, they're the ones that are just crushing it right now, because they're able to go to their end customer, whether it's, you know, building a massive building like this or a data center, they can come in and say, hey, I can meet your timeline. They're the ones that are getting rewarded, A, with a higher price point, but that loyalty is there, the long-term, you know, planning that they're doing, because they're taking into account the entire supply chain. And in some respects, it's kind of like all of us as consumers, as we look at Amazon, it's just predictable, right? Amazon can tell you they can deliver something, you know, next day. And so that's why they're growing so fast. And so manufacturers that look at it from that perspective to realize it's not just about creating a great product, as you said, but if they can help guarantee the end delivery and then the ongoing support of it, it's a lower overall total cost of maintenance. It's predictable. And then your end customer can start doing longer term planning. So it's a win-win for everybody.
You know, Nate, we touched on it a little bit ago, but, you know, obviously a massive part of that effective training is being modified into the world of the digital world now, right? Mm-hmm. Whether we're talking about, you know, pulling up a phone and being able to say, hey, here's where I need to plug in my, or where I need to screw in the wires for my water sprinkler system, right? But that scales up all the way to the AT&Ts of the world who are rolling out, you know, new fiber boxes, who need to teach their techs on site how to go install that fiber line. You know, one of the folks that you work with, everybody from the ASSA ABLOYs of the world to the Weber grills, right? There is a need for that training. And a lot of times the demand is digital, because I still very much hate paper instructions, because it doesn't give me what I need to do, and I end up putting the wrong screw in the wrong place. And I think of myself as a pretty savvy guy when it comes to being able to build things, but I still make those mistakes, right? And my ask has always been, hey, I need to be able to pull this up and look at this and see where that screw goes. How does this fit? Should I close it like this? And that's where Built actually came in, right? And I want to ask about that.
Sure.
Because Built, look, I don't normally gush about products on this show or services or app providers, because you get to see a lot of technology when you live in my job. But what you guys have done for the world of training and simulation and installation is actually pretty revolutionary, right? And I think that's really the long-term value of platforms like yours is you're leveraging the power of the cell phones that we have in our pocket, the vision headsets that we want to put on from Apple, all these different things, and you fully embrace that. And I think that's given you a head start, has it not?
Yeah, and actually, at the very, very beginning, when we were looking at 3D technology, which you know, 10, 12 years ago was not new. It's actually been around since the 90s. But the question that we were asking ourselves was, if we have 3D capabilities and we have smartphones that you've got, you know, data bandwidth is better. You got memory on the device. We saw this kind of this confluence, if you will. Of, hey, all these things coming together, we can start creating experiences that revolutionize how people interact with instructions. Because as you said, for most people, it's a very frustrating experience. And so when we were doing our first testing with this, what we were trying to determine was, can I take a frustrating experience that people walk into expecting it to be bad? Can I flip that so radically that someone comes out of it with just a sense of fulfillment, accomplishment, confidence in themselves? Because if I can do that, that actually creates more loyalty toward the brand. And at the end of the day, you've enriched someone's life, right? And as author Fred Reichheld, you know, has said many times, the author of the Net Promoter System is, when you focus on enriching someone's life, if you can truly do that, you have a customer for life. And so as we started bringing these things together, we literally went to people's homes and watched people install faucets to try to understand where's the friction. And then we brought this new world of technology, smartphone, pure, complete, you know, guided 3D interactive instructions, validated by the brand, updated in real time. And I mean, it's a simple example, but we were able to take what most people think of a faucet install from, say, American Standard. Most people worried they can't do it. Well, with Built, you can actually do that in 18 minutes.
Right.
And it's a great, great experience. I mean, it's actually a life enriching thing. You know, in a few weeks we'll have Christmas coming up. The reviews that we'll get coming in of people that will reflect on the brands like Kidcraft, a local one here that creates dollhouses. We'll get reviews just by the truckload that will come in of people saying, "A, you saved my marriage at 1 o'clock
and in the morning. My kids' Christmas." Yeah,
but oftentimes they'll say, "You know what? I'm going to bring my 8-year-old daughter in here to do this with me," and it ends up being a fun, great experience. They learn a skill, and so yeah, that's really what we focused on and Built is how can you bring these technologies which 20 years ago were not available, right, and how can we enrich someone's life and make a formerly frustrating experience actually something that is enabling and empowering and makes them better at what they do.
Well, it's so interesting. I love that the roots of the company are in that B2C experience, right? Because I think it's very easy, and you guys probably know this from a kind of an app development standpoint. You hear things like UI and UX and it's, oh, you know, what is my scrolling experience look like? What do my buttons look like? Is the interface correct? But the UI UX experience is very physical as well. And part of that, obviously, even just beyond the operation and, hey, does this work how I want it to? It's how does this get set up, right? Yeah. And you look at the world of smart homes and you look at the world of all these different things where people are taking more accountability for these installations and DIY and things like that. You kind of get to sit in this sweet spot and almost use the B2C market as kind of a test environment because you're making things that were previously inaccessible, more accessible, right? And yep. And no longer are we fully dependent on technicians who we love, obviously. But you're able to say, hey, we want to take this down to the lowest common denominator, somebody who probably isn't familiar with best practices of you know, the flow of water in their home or the plumbing issues. And now guess what? They just installed that sink. Now they've got that brand loyalty. They've got a little bit of confidence and ownership in the product themselves. And it's such a really interesting use case on that B2C side to start. Yep.
And you're right, kind of from a sequencing. We looked at it first and said, we know that long term there's going to be massive need when it comes to the industrial space, yeah, right? The B2B piece of it. But initially I chose to start out with the consumer. In some ways it's more simple, the products, but there's in a different way it's actually more complicated because as opposed to an industrial installer, that individual is paid to do that.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of repetition and opportunity to learn. Whereas when you have a consumer durable good, you get one shot, yeah, at it. And if it doesn't work, it's going in the trash or it's going to be returned back to Costco or something like that. And so the bar is actually much higher to guarantee that success. And so we said, let's start with that. Let's get that right. The volume of experiences will allow us to get a lot of experience to so that we can perfect that user experience. And then we can then start translating that into the industrial space. And sure enough, after we'd been doing the consumer space for a number of years and then had millions of users, we started to get more and more industrial clients coming in and saying, hey, I assembled a Weber grill over the weekend. That was actually a phenomenal experience. I'm hiring 50,000 right. technicians a year, you know, in my automotive company or something like that. I need that exact same experience. And so today, even though we're used in 172 countries, 12 different languages, we have hundreds of brands. Our biggest growth area is that industrial side, but it leverages the kind of perfected experience that we have as a foundation in the consumer side. It leverages it and brings it into the industrial world to make it a real wow for people.
Yeah. You know, Nate, I tell people all the time, you want to see what's going to happen next in B2B. I point them to B2C and say, give it 5 to 10 years and that's going to happen. Right. And, you know, we're at a point now where that B2C world continues to dramatically impact where we're going from a B2B standpoint. Obviously, training is part of that. But I want to ask, you know, we think about B2B and we think kind of the manufacturer channel and the installer technician channel. But there are a lot of different audiences that technology like this supports. Talk to me a little bit about some of those folks.
So it is wide. For example, if we take kind of another step in that, think of the trade unions and others that kind of are the horizontal perspective on this and how we train and enable people. We've had a lot of engagement lately with, for example, the Independent Electrical Contractors Association, right? IEC, NECA, which is the union side of it, really asking that same question is, okay, not specific to a brand, but how do we enable a large swath of the population here that needs to, you know, support these electrical industries? How do we rethink, you know, education and training, right? So we have that component of it. Our largest customer today is the United States Air Force. And you know, they're kind of the mega customer in that as to how it's used, but it's the same problem set. But education in general, we're starting to engage with some of the STEM, schools that are across the United States that are saying, how do I seed just understanding? How do I remove fear from a high school student, about this type of job? How do I build confidence that they can actually do these things? And so there's a pull of them wanting to bring the content that we have in there. And of course, there are thousands and thousands of products inside of Built that are publicly, you know, visible. And we want that to be there. We want young people to have those experiences to build confidence, say, hey, this is a skill that I can get and I can be a contributor to the world in this way if I want to be.
You know, Nate, so we talk a lot about buzzwords like AR, VR, spatial computing, and how they continue to impact the industries. And obviously each one could be kind of uniquely leveraged for training. But I want to ask you, you know, we talk about the Vision Pro headset kind of being in its own, you know, category, but can you define for us sort of what the use cases are for, you know, VR versus maybe AR and kind of define what those actually mean from a practical standpoint?
So when we think of typical AR and VR, you're most often you're just superimposing this on the natural background behind it, which in some contextual situations can be good because it makes it more real. Oftentimes retailers use these just to say, hey, I'm going to place this on a surface so you see what it actually looks like. But when it comes to training, what simple AR VR is missing is, in order for someone to truly learn, they actually need to be interacting and engaging with it as opposed to just looking. And this is why we feel like what Apple's created in the new Vision Pro headset is so revolutionary. A, just the definition that there is, you know, with the Vision Pro headset is just unreal. But the most important thing is you can take a fully immersive set of 3D instructions and place it in a room, but the person is totally hands-free. They can interact with it, zoom in, pinch, rotate it, as opposed to what we have found when they have in their hands a joystick or something like that, they're steering, but they're not actually interacting with it. And so from a psychology standpoint, that real adoption of the information, the real ingesting it so that they remember it, is actually hindered by that. Whereas when you make the hands completely free, it's so close to actually interacting with the real product. And that's when the learning has actually happened. So when we talk about, you know, speed to proficiency and recollection and remembering the information, that simple thing of being able to have the hands free and interact with it. And then you can use voice commands, right, if you want to zoom in or rotate or something like that. At least that's the way the built instructions work. You're now engaging all the senses in a very unique way. And this is when you start to have a turbocharged or almost exponential impact on learning and retention and confidence building. And so I think what you're going to see in the future is we had AR, VR that were kind of principal, you know, foundational concepts. But this immersive and spatial is what is going to lead the next phase of this.
Yeah. Well, let's talk long term. I mean, I love that you mentioned sort of the recruiting and retention benefits of it. I mean, what are some of the long term impacts of a better educated workforce? Well, focusing primarily more on the B2B side, obviously, here. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the long term impacts of folks who are a little bit more educated and treated, you know, or learning correctly the first time around?
Well, your first thing is going to be retention. Most any of the trade schools will tell you that they have a very hard time even keeping half of the class engaged, just because people get frustrated and they say, I can't be successful here, and they leave. And that's really, really unfortunate. So your retention, having 90 or 100% of the people make it through, is going to be the first thing. But if they're more capable or they're proficient 6 months faster, a year faster, they're making fewer mistakes. Quality is a big thing from a safety standpoint. Okay, if you're not making those mistakes, you have lower risk. That's going to impact your insurance rates, claims, and things like that. But also, if that person is proficient faster, you can afford to pay them more, which means they're more likely to stay in the industry. And so the faster they go up that curve of proficiency, better product is installed, happier customer, et cetera. The owner of the company is now making more money, right? There's fewer callbacks. This is one that has a wonderful flywheel in it when you focus on that education. And if it's faster and if it's higher quality, everybody wins in the process.
Yeah. I love even too the idea of, you know, long-term recertification, right? Obviously OSHA likes to update their compliance standards, it feels like, every single day, but now you're able to recert and retrain and talk about new technologies, right? Because we're at a point in technology where, hey, every 6 months we've got a new version of something coming out or a new piece of hardware. And it allows you really to drive long-term value and build off of those core skill sets that you have. You know, I mean, I'm curious, right? So let's say I'm a manufacturer, somebody who says, hey, I'm interested in kind of learning more about built and maybe building some of this out, right? Maybe I'm a hyper legacy B2B company who's done everything on paper forever and hasn't really embraced a lot of these technologies. Where do you recommend that people start that conversation?
So let's take either something where you have a lot of opportunity, or maybe you're feeling the burning pain. Let's start with these and sit down and talk about what success looks like. I know in our case, we don't sit down and focus so much on the hardware they're using with a headset, et cetera. We go in first and try to understand what's the job to be done. Are you trying to help the end distributor? Or in some cases, they feel like they've got that in decent shape, but it's actually at the manufacturing plant where they have so much turnover and I need to train and enable people right there. And then in our case, we are that turnkey easy solution. We'll take whatever assets you have. In many cases, we want access to that actual product because we're putting hands on it to validate that the instructions we create are darn near perfect. But we'll go through that process, create the instructions, and then we review that with the brand. And then once that review is done, they can be pushed out either in secret or publicly to them. And let's start getting that first little bit of feedback from users. But you don't have to boil the whole ocean to start out with, especially if you haven't gone into that world just yet. We can show you some pretty incredible results very, very quickly, and then help you map out the plan as to, okay, do we start with manufacturing? Do we start with your distributors? Do we start with your engineering installers or something like that? And because we have hundreds of brands and millions of users, we can give you pretty good guidance on where's the best place to start. So you get a quick return on investment and then can grow from there.
Well, look, it's easy to build from, right? Plus you're creating sort of this idea of owned media that I can repurpose at any given time, right? I can deploy across iPhones, Vision Pro, scales really well. Nate, I want to wrap with this, give you a chance really to plug Built a little bit. You know, talk to me about what the next 5, 10, 15 years of Built looks like and how folks can continue to partner with you.
So we first off, we want to be an important contributor to this opportunity and challenge of the fact that we need to train literally millions of tradespeople. They're such important workers for what we need in the future, whether a mechanic or an electrician. They're needed. They're going to be paid very well. We want to be locked arm in arm with them to just make them exceptional at what they do and not just good at one specific thing. We want them to be good at a lot of different things. And so as fellow Americans, we definitely want to be contributors to that. We've got a great platform. It's been validated. We've got the greatest partnerships in the world. And so we want to make that difference. But yeah, in the coming years, we will cover the globe. We want to enrich 1 billion people's lives with what we do and turn them into promoters of the brands that we serve. So it's a great challenge, but it's a good one, and we're excited to do it together with great brands.
Well, I'll tell you, I love hearing that your goal is to impact people, because you're doing it on really both sides of the token, right? You're doing it whenever I get home and I'm trying to build something and put it together for my daughter's nursery, or I'm going to work and trying to install something on our wall, or you know, down in the rack room, right? You get to touch all sorts of different points of people's lives and in their day-to-day. Really lives in general. So Nate, I'll tell you what, man, just from somebody who's been a user of the platform in my personal life, you got a big thank you from me, but I guarantee you there's already folks that you're working with who want to give you that big thank you right back to you, because the work that you guys are doing is impacting people's lives, right? And I think that mission-driven focus and that focus on that experience will continue to serve you well in the future. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ben. Good to be here.
And thank you all for tuning in. Be sure to like and subscribe. Check us out next time on Pro AV Today.